Hawks announced they've traded left-hander Felix DeBrunt to the Chicago Cubs for a player to be named. Support for NPR comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. Partly sunny skies in the forecast for today with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs around 80. Right now, 78 degrees in Boston. I'm Jordan Weinstein. For more news, visit WGBHnews.org.
He's Jim Browdy. I am Marjorie Egan. You're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.
Hey there, Marjorie.
Hi.
So our intention today was to start the show with conversation of John Lester, the ace pitcher for the Red Sox, departure for the Oakland A's, but actually something I would argue much more important has interceded. We've talked a lot about the probation trial here, almost nonstop during the trial, during deliberations, post-verdict, as you know, the convictions of John O'Brien, former probation commissioner, and two of his lieutenants. One of the most dramatic pieces of the whole trial was the mention of the Speaker of the House as an unindicted co-conspirator by the prosecutors late in the trial, not in the opening statement. Not indicted, no opportunity on the part of Bob DeLeo, the Speaker of the House, to respond, which a lot of people think is quite unfair on the part of the U.S. Attorney, Carmen Ortiz. And Bob DeLeo, subsequent to the verdict, has said unequivocally, explicitly, he said it to me on television, he said it to anybody who asked, that he feels exonerated by the verdict of the jury because there was no bribery conviction, meaning that there were not two sides of a deal. He's used the word that I felt exonerated. Somebody else who's commented on this, which has been fairly high profile the last few days, is the mayor of Boston was kind enough to spend an hour with us the other day. And in the middle of the interview, we asked him this. Based on having served in the legislature and observing the trial, I know you weren't in the courtroom, I know you weren't in the jury, was John O'Brien guilty of a crime?
That's a good question. I don't think so.
And needless to say, if you've been reading the papers and listening to the talk around town, there's been a lot of discussion about what that means and whether that was a wise decision. We'll leave that to you. That's not what we're here to discuss today. Last night, I got an email from someone who identified themselves as a member of the probation trial jury. And after I spoke to Marjorie about it, you said something like, you better make sure that this actually was a member of the jury before you read any.
Yeah,
is that what you said?
You never know until you check it out. So, yes, you had to make sure it was a member of the jury. And indeed, I think you've confirmed it was a member of the jury.
We shared some of this information with the Boston Globe and through the work of the Boston Globe and the reporter who's been working on the case, Milton Valencia, and through some conversations I had with this juror, who we will not name, by the way, at this particular juror's request. We confirmed that this was a member of the jury in the John O'Brien probation verdict. So what we're going to do, it's going to take a minute or two because it's long and I think quite thoughtful. We're going to read you, Marjorie and I are going to read you, the actual email I received late last night from this member of the jury. And then we're going to urge you to give us a buzz at 877-301-8970 and get your sense of what your reaction is to this and what you think should happen next. And by the way, the reporters at WGBH are now reaching out to two people mentioned in this, the mayor of the city of Boston, Marty Walsh, and most specifically, Robert DeLeo, the Speaker of the House, who's got a pretty busy day since it's either the last day or the second to last day of session. So should we start?
Well, I think before we start, just so people don't get lost in the weeds, I think the two essential points here is that this juror takes issue with Mayor Walsh claiming that this was not a crime, that John O'Brien did not commit a crime. And the second thing, he takes issue with Speaker DeLeo saying that he was exonerated. In fact, the juror does not feel that DeLeo was exonerated at all. So those are the two main points.
And now you'll hear the juror in this person's own words. So
yes.
You want to start?
I'll start. Okay, sure. This is the letter from the juror. As a member of the jury that delivered the verdict in the John O'Brien trial, I find the mayor's comments irresponsible and reckless and borderline ridiculous. He suggests we came to the wrong decision and then states that he, quote, didn't get all the facts of the case. So how would he know if we came to the wrong decision or not? He also seems confused as to what the charges were even about. I would hope the mayor of a major city would know something, anything about an issue before he comments.
And then the juror continues. Furthermore, he states states elected officials have, quote, an obligation to be helpful to their constituents, including, when appropriate, assistance with employment opportunities, writing letters of recommendation for schools, and so on, end quote. Great, continues the juror, but that has nothing to do with what John O'Brien was charged with or with what we found proven. It was made clear from the beginning that political patronage was not illegal, nor was it even illegal that there was a rigged system. What we found him guilty of was mail fraud. What was illegal was that there was a reasonable expectation that U.S. mails would be used, and John's signature stated he complied with the personnel and policy manual, which state hiring must be based on merit. Speaking for myself and no other jurors, as well as being instructed as to what mail fraud actually is, I found that proven beyond a reasonable doubt, which led to the charges of racketeering and conspiracy.
And then the juror continues, I just want to make it clear that this was a hard case for all of us. We didn't take the charges lightly. These are people's lives. Personally, I found O'Brien likable and feel he was stuck between a rock and a hard place. Make the legislature happy or suffer budget cuts and or layoffs of the staff you oversee and care about. He did the wrong things for the right reasons. For the mayor to make the comments he did diminishes our efforts, and his admission that he really didn't know what the case was about is pretty much a slap in our face.
And now the paragraph that the juror wrote to me about the Speaker of the House, and he uses a term that neither of us are familiar with in the first few words here, which leads to Elmo, that's the term, which leads to Elmo and DeLeo. I have followed his statements about the verdict. In no way do I feel our decision exonerated DeLeo. To the contrary, I feel he should have been on trial rather than O'Brien. We found gratuity proven rather than bribery because no witness was able to testify to the conversations that occurred between O'Brien and DeLeo. All of it seemed suspicious, but we had no testimony that spoke to what DeLeo said or did. To feel these jobs were given to DeLeo to hand out for no reason whatsoever strains credulity. However, I feel O'Brien himself is the only person who could prove whether this was a gratuity or a bribe, and he chose not to testify.
Can I read the last paragraph?
You may indeed.
This is a great paragraph. My hope is that John O'Brien himself will at some point testify against DeLeo and exchange any sentence against him or Liz Tavares or Bill Burke, those are the other two defendants, will be lessened or done away with altogether. That's the end of his statement. In other words, he doesn't think they should serve any time. That's the way it sounds to me.
Our number is 877-301-8970. Again, this is an unnamed juror. We confirmed that this person was a juror in the probation trial. Suggests that that the comments the mayor made to us the other day were irresponsible and reckless and borderline ridiculous. And then goes on to say that in no way do I feel our decision exonerated DeLeo, meaning the Speaker of the House. And the final paragraph is also quite heavy. As Marjorie, my hope is that John himself, meaning O'Brien, John himself will at some point testify against DeLeo, and in exchange, any sentence against him or Liz Tavares or Bill Burke would be lessened or done away with altogether. Our number is 877-301-8970. This is pretty heavy stuff. I mean, it carries no legal weight. A juror does not have the power to prosecute or initiate a prosecution. I've read conflicting things, by the way, back and forth, about whether or not the statute of limitations is run on any potential case against any member of the legislature. But there also have been pieces written saying, well, John O'Brien does not want to leave his family for years and years. If he flips, as they use that term, would he get a lighter sentence if he flipped, meaning testified against certain legislators? Again, our number is 877-301-8970.
You know what this whole situation reminds me of? The mayor's comments. And Marty Walsh, by all accounts, has done a lot of great things. John Conley himself, that ran against him, declared just a few days ago that he's been a great mayor and he loves him. But Marty Walsh is in the legislature for a long time. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Bob DeLeo has been in the legislature for a long time. A lot of them have been there for a long time. It's the old story about the frog put into the water when the water is still cool. You heat up the water, the frog doesn't realize he's about to boil to death. Well, it's as if they've been up there so long that they don't see how to regular Joe and Jane, how dirty and corrupt and unfair the system looks. And I don't know what John O'Brien was thinking. At one point, he made some remark about how, you know, these guys are pigs. They're never satisfied.
They're a bunch of pigs, pointing to the state house.
You know, so he was frustrated by the request coming from all sides, from legislators and judges and other people in positions of power and stuff. But it's as if there's this whole Beacon Hill culture that operates with its own set of rules. And when you've been living in that culture for a long time, you somehow forget that this is bad stuff.
Well, you know, also, I think further evidence what you're saying, Marjorie, is, and we mentioned this to Brian McGrory, the editor of the Globe, when he was with us yesterday, the fact that, to my knowledge, not one single legislator of the 200, or at least of the Democrats, maybe I shouldn't include the Republicans there, not one single Democrat, to my knowledge, post-verdict, has said, we get the message, we know things have to change, we know the reforms we did in 2011 are not enough, speaks powerfully, I think, to a problem that needs piercing. But let me reiterate something I said, which doesn't, I mean, the juror was there. I wasn't there. I just read accounts of the trial. I am in that camp of people who feel naming Bob DeLeo an unindicted co-conspirator, two-thirds or halfway into the case.
Unfair.
With no opportunity to defend himself or testify when she could have indicted him. She could have called, she, Carmen Ortiz, U.S. Attorney, could have called him to testify. Doesn't in any way detract what the juror's position is, from the juror's position, but there is a fundamental unfairness. Put yourself in a position, no matter what you think he did or didn't do, of all of it. He is not named in the opening statement by the prosecutors. His name comes up as an unindicted co-conspirator, part of a quid pro quo, and all he can do is issue press releases and do little briefings outside his office. But again, that's a whole separate issue. 877-301-8970. Again, I got this email last night from a juror. We promised we would protect this particular juror's anonymity once we confirmed that this person was actually a member of this jury. Let's take a couple of phone calls if we can. Ed, you're in Milford. You're first on Boston Public Radio with Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. Hey there.
Hi, Jim, Marjorie. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
Sure.
I have no opinion really on the O'Brien verdict, except to say that I assume that a politician on trial is guilty. Although in this day and age, polarized day and age we live in, a trial for reasons of political affiliation is not out of the question. The mayor's comment as to the incorrectness of the verdict may be ill-advised. Again, I really have no issue. The main thing that I took away from the mayor's on your show was his assertion that he had never heard the term unindicted co-conspirator. This is a politician who either is ignorant of or has forgotten probably one of the most important political events in modern American history.
And
yeah,
which
talking
was?
About Watergate? Yeah. Is the Watergate reference?
Watergate,
yeah.
Trial, for crying out loud.
Well, can I tell you, I am surely not anyone. My job is not to defend Marty Walsh in any context. I have one thing I have found him to be, whether one disagrees or agrees with what he has to say. The guy is a pretty straight arrow, and I think Marjorie would agree. So I can't explain that away. That is odd. You're right. And he's also a pretty smart character. But he did say that when we did the interview the other day. Ed, thanks for the call.
Well, you know what else is fascinating about this trial? And it says something about the culture of Boston. If you talk to someone who grew up in Boston, they grew up in Dorchester like John O'Brien did, or like Peter Kazis, our colleague here at WGBH, or South Boston, like my good friend and colleague, former colleague actually at the Boston Herald, Peter Gelsinis. This is what politics is all about. You held signs for people and they took care of you. This is why you were holding signs for people. In a federal court, you don't have a Suffolk County jury that's sort of in the know for these kinds of things, or a city jury. You have people from the suburbs, people that really didn't grow up with this sort of culture, didn't grow up with this kind of expectation. They're sitting there listening to this, and I'm sure they're horrified. And and where people, again, like the culture of Beacon Hill or the culture of those politically connected in Boston is, hey, this is the way it works. As Bill Weld said, this is the former
walruses.
Governor of Massachusetts, who's a Republican, by the way, said this is the Mazzola oil of politics. This is how it works.
Yeah, but let me be careful. You know, Judge Young said repeatedly, at least at the beginning of the trial, and he said it in different ways, patronage is not illegal. I have no problem at all with a legislator in public fashion, recommending someone they know well who supported them if he or she is qualified for the job. And the reason I don't is because they actually know the person, and it's far better to recommend someone you know than someone you don't know. The issue is recommending someone who you know to be wildly unqualified for a position that matters.
That's true.
Being a probation officer or a probation chief is serious stuff.
It's very serious stuff. But I think in that culture, just a couple of steps beyond the old probation thing. I mean, a long time ago, Jim, we had a discussion about Terry Murray, the Senate president, recommending a firefighter that was like 600 and something on the list.
Yep, he was.
And popped him up to the top.
Number one.
Now, did the Ethics Commission do an investigation of her? Was she chastised on the House of the Senate for doing something that was really blatantly bad? Was this firefighter qualified? I don't know. So I guess that's what I'm saying, that things have gotten really warped.
I'm not defending, by the way, that, jumping a list. I'm saying if you have the power to recommend and you pick someone you know well who has helped you, who is eminently qualified for a position, that's not only fine, I think it's very fine because you want it. But this clearly, well, according to the jury, crossed the line. Again, the reason we're having this discussion is I got received an email from a juror in the probation trial who said he considers the comments the mayor made to us and then were subsequently reported in the Globe to be irresponsible, reckless, and borderline ridiculous. And he goes on to say, for those of you just tuned in, he says, about Speaker DeLeo, I followed his statements about the verdict. In no way do I feel our decision exonerated DeLeo. To the contrary, I feel he should have been on trial rather than O'Brien. We found gratuity proven rather than bribery. Those are terms of art, obviously, because no witness was able to testify to the conversations that occurred between O'Brien and DeLeo. All of it seemed suspicious, but we had no testimony that spoke to what DeLeo said or did. To feel these jobs were given to DeLeo to hand out for no reason whatsoever strains credulity. However, I feel O'Brien himself is the only person who could prove whether this was a gratuity or bribe. He chose not to testify. And then the takeaway is the final paragraph. The juror says, my hope is that John, meaning O'Brien, that John himself will at some point testify against DeLeo and in exchange, any sentence against him or Liz Tavares or Bill Burke will be lessened or done away with altogether. Now, in fairness to DeLeo, we should say, while the prosecutor said he was an unindicted co-conspirator, they could have indicted. They chose not to indict Bob DeLeo. So that's important
and
for people to know.
There were questions that was all political, too, that was a political decision not to indict him, excuse me.
Made above Carmen Ortiz's head by
yes.
pure speculation by the Attorney General of the United States, who did not want to see any Democrats in an election year in a defendant's seat in a high-profile federal trial.
And the fourth speaker in a row in Massachusetts, which is really something when you think about it.
Well, but again, he was charged with nothing. You can have your opinion. Obviously, this juror has an informed opinion, but he was charged with
nothing.
And
the other thing about Bob DeLeo, he's a very personable guy.
He is.
I mean, it's really difficult not to like the guy. I've seen him a million times on your show, talked to him, interviewed him. He seems like a great guy. Anyway, Richard from Watertown. What do you think, Richard?
Hello, Richard.
Well, I don't understand where you folks are coming from. First, Jim, I've had a problem with you for a week because I don't understand your defense of DeLeo. DeLeo wasn't accused from innuendo. DeLeo was part of testimony in a federal court. People testified as to what his role was. And he was given 10 jobs to give out, just to give out. The people didn't even have to apply. And if you think that is innocence, I don't understand.
Richard, excuse me. By the way, I'm not going to cut you off, so don't worry. Let me be clear. I am not defending or condemning Bob DeLeo. What I've said repeatedly is the U.S. attorney who has the power to do what you think she should have done chose not to indict this guy. That's all I have said. And he's in a position sitting in his office hearing his name listed as an unindicted co-conspirator. If Bob DeLeo broke the law as you believe he did, and apparently Carmen Ortiz believes he did by calling him an unindicted co-conspirator, you know what she should have done? She should have indicted him and let the jury hear the case against him. That's my whole case. I don't know what he did. I don't know what's true, what's not true. I'm just telling you that he was not indicted. Continue. I'm sorry, Richard.
Right, but your defense has been more than just that, because he was part of testimony. So it's not like there was some innuendo being done. They didn't try him because they didn't think they could make the case. Now, making a case like this isn't always about guilt and innocence. It's about who you're going to get to testify and who won't testify.
That is true. That is true.
And so that's the reason why he wasn't indicted, because they just didn't think they could make the case. But to say that he's innocent as the pure driven snow.
I didn't say he was innocent as any snow. I've never said he was innocent or guilty.
He was, you know, his name came up in testimony.
Yes.
Before it came up by the attorney general. Now, I think what Carmen Ortiz did is that I don't think she knew how deep he was into it until that testimony came up. and they were totally unprepared for it.
Well, you know, Richard, if I may interrupt again, you know what she should have done at her press conference after the guilty verdict? She should have said that instead of you speculating, which you're entitled to do, about what her motivations were. She was free to say, here's why I didn't indict him. Here's why I only learned, just as you said, she chose not to answer the questions. Continue.
Okay. The mayor.
Yeah.
You know, I heard him say that he's going to oppose all the medical pot shops, their locations and everything.
I didn't hear that, but go ahead.
He said that many times. And, you know, that was passed by a referendum of the voters. You know, at some point you have to respect the voters, just like the Republican stalemate in Congress. They're trying to nullify the election that we elected the president, and they're trying to nullify it by making it impossible for him to govern.
Well, let me be clear, Richard, and thank you for your call. I've never heard him say he voted against it, he told us and told us. I believe this is true. I never heard him say that he's opposing any of what you call the pot shops in Boston. By the way,
the medical
I don't know,
marijuana dispensaries.
To our colleagues,
is that the correct term?
I don't know if the email from the jurors is yet on our website. Can you let us know as soon as it is, so we don't have to read it again, or if people want to actually read the words of this individual juror? If it's not up now at WGBHnews.org, it will be up soon.
You know, we should point out, obviously, that there were many other legislators who were brought up in the course of this trial, asking for jobs for people that were a questionable full qualification. You mentioned Terry Murray, the Senate President. Petrolatti, what was the nickname for him? The representative? He was like the
Patronage King or something
like that. I mean, he was apparently recommending an awful lot of people. So there were other legislators. Jack Hart, former legislator from South Boston, took the stand and said he didn't remember a lot of things. So there were quite a few people. It wasn't just, obviously, the Leo.
And by the way, in all fairness, I know it was Richard, the first caller, is going to be more aggravated with me. All I'm doing, Richard, is repeating testimony. I'm not suggesting innocence. Both of the state reps who acknowledged that they got a call from DeLeo's office saying, you want to pick somebody for this thing, the allegation was that DeLeo, what he got in return for that call was their votes for speaker. Both, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Marjorie, both reps testified that they had committed to DeLeo before they'd gotten the phone call offering them a job for a constituent or a friend. But again, I'm not condemning him. I'm not indicting him. I'm not clearing him. I'm just stating the facts. And again, this individual juror says, in no way do I feel our decision exonerated DeLeo. And he goes on to say he hopes that O'Brien is going to testify against DeLeo at some point and get a reduced sentence.
Well, one of the great lines in this trial is that, you know, the quid was indicted and the quo was not indicted. So this juror, obviously, Howie Carr said that, wrote that line. And this juror obviously felt that same thing. I've got these people in front of me. I really hope they don't go to jail. But they were, what they were alleged to have done was proven beyond a reasonable doubt. So we had to convict them. But I'd like to see the big fish in the defendant's docket as well. And when you're watching this trial, I thought, wrongly, that they were all going to be acquitted because I thought the whole jury would say, well, gee, I'm seeing all these probation people here. Well, where are the legislators? Where are the people that benefited from these jobs? But obviously, from this juror's perspective, they were convinced by the prosecution that the three people, Tavares, O'Brien, and Burke, were guilty as charged.
And by the way, just so that Marjorie does not stand out there alone, there's somebody else who I respect a lot. That'd be me, who thought the exact same thing, that there'd be an acquittal because of who was not there, namely some legislator. By the way, just to evince our fairness here, we have invited the Speaker of the House to join us. He was on TV with me the other night. He has never said no to an invitation. They have a massive session today, and I guarantee you that we will continue to extend it, and either tomorrow or next week we would hope to get the Speaker's reaction to what this juror said about him.
Let's go to Ed from New Hampshire. None of this goes on up there, Ed, does it? Does it go on in New Hampshire at all? Don't your legislators get $100 a year or something like that?
Yeah, that's about all.
Yeah, okay. What do you think, Ed?
I just had a question overall. I think Jim brought up an extremely important point about this whole topic, is the patronage positions. What if the patronage positions go to someone who's not qualified? I work in Massachusetts at a public facility that is run by a person who's woefully not capable, and that was a patronage position from a fairly well-known politician. It's pretty amazing to me how that can be done so wide open. That seems to me to be the issue of illegality, I would say.
Yeah, but of course, as the judge pointed out over and over again, as unseemly and terrible and bad for everybody as that seems to be, it's not a crime. It is just not a crime. I mean, it used to be much more blatant, Ed. I remember years ago in the 60s and 70s and stuff, there would be actual patronage offices. You know, the city of New York had a patronage
called
office.
Called that, was it not, or
yes.
was it?
I mean, it's not illegal, although you're right. It's bad.
Ed, thanks for the call. I want to read another section that I read a minute ago from this juror's letter that addresses exactly the point that Ed was making. It was made clear from the beginning that political patronage was not illegal, nor was it even illegal. There was a rigged system. What we found him, meaning O'Brien, guilty of was mail fraud. What was illegal was that there was a reasonable expectation that U.S. mails would be used, and John's signature stated he complied with the personnel and policy manual, which states hiring must be based on merit. Speaking for myself and no other jurors, as well as being instructed as to what mail fraud actually is, I found that proven beyond a reasonable doubt, which led to the charges of racketeering and conspiracy, meaning they had to be demonstrated, at least to this juror's mind, and I believe to the judge's mind, that the sum of the recommendations and hirings were for people who were clearly on their face unqualified.
And we should point out there are many very brilliant legal minds who think this whole prosecution was ridiculous. Harvey Silverglate is one of them, and says that you know, to be convicted of a crime, you have to really understand it's a crime. And he was defending O'Brien, saying, did O'Brien even know this was a crime? And he thought that the federal government twisted racketeering and misused racketeering. What do you most associate racketeering charges with? The mob.
Mob, yes.
You know, so that it was twisted around because they wanted to find a way to is this really racketeering, was Silverglate's argument.
You know, and also, speaking of Bob DeLeo's willingness, unlike the Senate president, I should say, to do interviews, a couple of times ago when Bob DeLeo was on my show, I asked him the following question, which I actually believe hit on something, even though he said it was not true. I said, is it possible that you violated the law, statutory law, but didn't think you were violating the law, meaning that it was not a willful crime, but that you did something that technically is absolutely illegal, but you didn't think. Of course, he said, no, that's not the case. But, you know, it gets to your thing. This is how it's done. This is, as evidence, if people say, Jim, you're full of it, well, then why is not one Democratic legislator said, boy, did we ever get a message from that verdict the other day? We know we got to change the way we do business. Not one. Not one. DeLeo at least had the decency to admit that his reputation was tarnished. She said it repeatedly. But not one Democratic legislator said, boy, we escaped by the skin of our teeth and we have gotten the message. Let's take one or two more quick ones.
Christopher just emailed from New Hampshire, where this doesn't go on either, of course, because their legislators make no money.
$65? What is it, $100?
I think it's $100 or something. It's a gentleman's legislature. But Christopher says, I hope this big mess convinces the voters in Massachusetts they need to break the one-party rule and vote for Charlie Baker.
Well, that's what Baker has said. I mean, Baker has said repeatedly, this proves that one party rule does not. And by the way, the guy who is running against Charlie Baker in the Republican primary, Mark Fisher, will be with us in just a couple of minutes. Let's just get one more quick one. Norm, you're in Waltham. Thank you for calling Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. Thanks. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I wanted to present a naive and idealistic point of view.
Okay. Go ahead.
I believe that there should be no patronage. The system should only be merit-based because it puts at a disadvantage all the other candidates who are qualified but don't have any connection to the legislators. And any intervention by legislators should be restricted to trying just to remedy the system if the merit-based process did not work. For example, a long time ago I applied for a federal summer job. It was an exam-based thing. I got some veterans points added. I had a great score. I didn't get contacted for a job. So eventually I contacted Senator Kennedy's office. They looked into it. They, you know, fixed the process. They got me the job. But it was all merit-based. You know what I mean?
Yes, we do know what you mean.
No, except that you called Kennedy's office and he helped you get the job. So you could say it was not all merit-based. But you know what the problem with this is? I'll be
Norm,
quick,
thanks.
Because we're up against the clock here.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't want to get rid of all patronage because there are instances where politicians want to have an inner circle of people that they can
trust.
Yeah. And then have political savvy and skills. And there are a lot of people who are very qualified on paper who have no political savvy and skills. I mean, you find this all the time in new administrations where Deval Patrick appointed people he knew well who didn't turn out so well. Barack Obama has appointed people who mm-hmm. were friends of his from Chicago who people would argue did not turn out so well. So, you know, in some cases it works, in some cases it doesn't. You don't want people totally unqualified.
By the way, we want to thank this juror, who we are not naming at this person's request, for having the courage to sit down and write a very thoughtful piece. Again, we will solicit the response of the mayor, who is mentioned here, and of course the Speaker of the House. By the way, there's an article in the Boston Globe right now on its website, bostonglobe.com, about that, and the full text of the email that we received is now available to you at WGBHnews.org.
You know, should JFK have appointed his brother RFK as the Attorney General, Jim? What do you
think? Well, that was a big issue, by the way. And wasn't there legislation filed about all that? What's that thing called?
I don't know. You can't appoint your brother Attorney
Nepotism,
General.
Nepotism, yes. Well, I mean, I think there was an anti-nepotism thing filed after that. I'm not sure. In any case, go check it out, WGBHnews.org or bostonglobe.com.
We are continuing our series of conversations with the people running for governor. Excuse me. And joining us in Studio 3 is Mark Fisher to tell us about his campaign for governor of Massachusetts. You're listening to 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
When it comes to real estate, we know that what matters is location, location, location. But that's also true for cities themselves.
Dubai's location used to be a disaster. It's way...